here we go with another episode of We Talk Comics. This is number 172, Gibraltar of the Pacific. I'm Mo, and I'm joined by Brent.
Hello.
And tonight we have with us a documentary film maker, director, author, many books in his library that are kind of specialized on American military conflicts. Most specifically, is a new book out, a comic book, Pearl Harbor and the Day of Infamy, Jay Works.
Hi, Brett. Hi, Mo.
Did we get everything correct there?
You did. Thank you for the nice introduction.
Thank you. Thank you. Well, really, we do appreciate your coming on with us as we approach the 75th anniversary of Pearl Harbor. And we had an opportunity. We had a copy forwarded to us, a preview of the book. And the first question, obviously, is quite simple. Why a comic book?
Well, I've written a lot of different forms in World War II history. The primary vehicle that I have authored is something called War Stories World War II Firsthand, and it's a large format book with a lot of pictures and maps, and obviously text relating to the various battles and campaigns of the war. It's a multi-volume series. I've finished five of them. And it also features about 600 veterans and eyewitnesses of the campaign. They're actual eyewitness stories that I interviewed or were interviewed by associates of mine. And dating this very fascinating period of American history and world history of World War II. But I still felt that I wanted to reach a new generation, a younger generation audience and readers. You know, I am of the generation of the sons and daughters of that greatest generation of those World War II veterans and Rosie the Riveters and people who were part of the war effort. But we're very involved. We're very close to it. Our children and our children's children, not so much. They don't relate necessarily to the lifestyles, the sacrifices, the time period as people of my generation do. So I thought, I know that comics and comic characters, superheroes and so on, are very popular and have remained popular over many years. And I wanted to restart something that I had experienced a little bit as a youth, and that was the realistic, or you might call it the history comic book. In other words, telling the real history but in comic book form. Looks just like a lot of other comic styles, and developing the characters among the true individuals and the true events of the period rather than creating them from scratch. Now, that being said, we have a special bonus that we've started with this Pearl Harbor and the Day of Infamy, and that is a World War II graphic novel in serial form. In other words, I've started a historically based but fictional story that I want to then keep going in future episodes of future comics when I'm going to cover other battles and campaigns. So it's a little bit of two different things. It's kind of a hybrid. We do the straight history and try to dramatically illustrate it and tell it in a good form, and I even throw in a few eyewitness quotes. And then at the end of the book is the beginning of, as they say, a fictionalized, a graphic novel, if you will, story, but it's set in the same period and with characters that are based on composite of real individuals and real events.
Yeah, I was interested in that for sure. So the question that I'll ask is, how long do you think the Pearl Harbor book is, and then what are some of the others, and how long do you picture them going on?
Well, we've kind of tailored it to the around the 22 to 24 page model that my partner and I have to say, I am not as up to date on the current comic genre and what's available as you gentlemen are. So I had my partner call some things together. We did some research and tried to match somewhat stylistically and in length and so on the the comic books of this time period of now, and also go into the digital domain and do a digital as well as a paper version. So they're probably going to remain more or less in that 22, 24, 26 page. And I do have a couple of very interesting upcoming topics. I'm kind of making it chronologically, and at this point, sticking with the Pacific War, although I think if the popularity is there, we'd like to expand it to the war in Europe and the rest of the world as well. But sticking with the Pacific War, the next logical place to go is what's tentatively titled The Battling Bastards of Bataan. And these are the Americans and Filipinos that fought the Japanese in the Philippine Islands for what a lot of people don't know, 6 months of hard fighting before the Bataan Death March even started. So that's a rather depressing but very interesting and historically important period. Then we'll go to probably the most significant battle of the Pacific campaign, even though there's a lot of other famous battles and names, but in terms of overall strategy, and that was the Battle of Midway. That's the battle where we might say that the tide was turned against the Japanese. Mostly a sea battle, of course, airplanes and sea, lots of action in the air and the skies, and lots of bombing of both sides. And then, of course, Guadalcanal, the famous Marine campaign, became a Marine and Army campaign, but also involved a lot of naval action. Saipan, Iwo Jima, just to name a few. So it's really exciting. And then, as I say, if we do well and we hold the interest and people are wanting to see more, then I'd like to also expand it to the other aspects, the other campaigns and periods of World War II.
So what to you then is doing well? Because I know, like, we have a general idea of what does well for a mainstream comic, but in your case, like, especially because this is Monroe Publishing publishing the Imprint World War II comics, is it?
Yes, yeah, it's a new publishing company founded by a partner, and I am. We both have background in historical writing and publishing, and we offer some other products, but this is sort of our rollout of the new company product. I would say if we get requests or we get people that want to follow it, that ask us when the next one is coming, that are following the series, if we get perhaps some interest among educational outlets, if they see this as a value in teaching history, like some educators are already starting to do with the comics that are available, the traditional comics that are available now. If we get capture a younger and a digital audience, then I think we say we've done well enough to try to keep moving forward.
It's actually very interesting you bring that up, the educational portion, because we have a gentleman who has published a comic book about the War of 1812 through, and it was very difficult for him to get the book into the traditional comic book shop, to break it into that. That's really where the superhero market, you know, is everything. So it was difficult for him to get it in there, but he did quite well getting into bookstores and libraries and schools, and it actually sold very well. But it was a different strategy, and he had to kind of attack it from that perspective. So what are you guys looking at to do as far as getting it in people's hands?
Exactly, I think, the same concept, because we are also a mainstream publisher. We even though we're new, but from the companies that we work with, we draw a great deal of experience dealing with traditional booksellers, so we have that. And we do have plans to aggressively approach the educational market with their guidance, that they approve that this is a concept that they want to include in the classroom. So it will be outside, as you say, the traditional comic book shops. I don't expect that we have we'll have too much interest there. But, you know, you never know, because I'll give you a little story, if I may, from my past.
Please do.
Of course, I did a lot of work before World War II on the Civil War, and I was approached by a company and this goes back almost 20 years ago, who wanted to do a realistic Civil War. What then was, of course, mostly computer games. Now it's pretty much all Xbox and PlayStation, but at that time, a lot of the games were still based on the computer. And they wanted to do a realistic game based on the Civil War for computers. So I helped them with the portion of the live action, which I had a lot of live action material, and I created some more from a documentary I did. And we included that with their game. And it was called Civil War Generals. It did okay. It was a small company. They were bought by a bigger company, if you're familiar with games, called Sierra Online. But they got enough to do the second one. And then the larger company sort of said, we don't really want to go in that direction. We don't see a lot of gamers interested in the strategy, interested in the history. They just want to shoot them up. So they kind of got away from it for a while. However, over time, you see that more and more realistic games are coming out, that there is more an interest in. I mean, how many times can you shoot up a fictional character? You know, how many ways? I'm sure there are a lot, but nevertheless, there is some with Call of Duty and things like that. It's becoming more realistic again. And it could be the same with this. It could be the fact that maybe it doesn't catch on at first. Maybe really superheroes is where it's at, and fantasy-based comics. But maybe over time, some of that audience will also realize, you know, there's something to this real stuff. The art's still good. The story moves. There's some characters and so on. You know, maybe we'll give this a second chance, or at least in some hybrid type of a form like we're suggesting here. So you never know, but based on a trend that I saw in recent history, I thought it might have a chance with some traditional comic book aficionados.
And absolutely, I really did enjoy the book. And it is very exciting. The events of that day, they are absolutely exciting. So it's an exciting adventure. I almost feel guilt enjoying it from and it's the excitement of it, considering, you know, it's a real-life event and it's quite tragic. But then you'll be, it's almost more like the beginning portion is almost more like a visual novel thing. Because you are, you know, giving us a chronological history of the day and the events of the day and around that day. And then afterwards, then we get, as you say, kind of the story where it's more characters, more of a traditional comic book style. So, you know, I think it's actually just kind of a brave choice to kind of mix these two things. And how did you decide kind of the length of the backup story and how you would approach that and how you approach the beginning portion? Because there's so much that you can, only so much you can fit in, you know, within that context of how you frame the story work. And there's a lot of stuff that's about that day that's interesting that you obviously probably couldn't get in there, you might have wished to. So how did you kind of approach that and narrow down the points that you consider to be the most important and still keep the story moving and the action moving in that fashion?
Mm-hmm. Well, what I excel in is more of a general history, since my background is as a filmmaker and a communicator rather than as an academic historian. I don't necessarily concentrate too much on the fine, fine details of a battle or event or a unit or whatever it is. And, you know, I rely heavily on other historians who have, but I try to give it, in a way, the framing as one would in a film, where you have a limited time and you have to create some sort of a dramatic structure, a dramatic strain that goes through, and try to hit a combination of the high points, the most familiar, the most dramatic, and a few details sprinkled in of particularly the fascinating human aspects. Like the story is, as you know from reading it, it's a famous story, but perhaps not the most well-known story of of Pearl Harbor. When I say famous, famous among people who are very familiar with it, perhaps not as familiar with the general public. And that's the story of Doris, or a.k.a. Dory Miller, of the USS West Virginia, who the heavyweight champion was just a mess steward on the boat. But when called to help his mortally wounded captain, to help get him to a safe place, which he did, he then was seized by the moment and grabbed a 50-millimeter anti-aircraft gun that he was barely trained on, and just was started firing away, and he received the Navy Cross, the highest honor in the Navy, for doing so. So there's just so much, and you say, you know, and I don't understand your point of view, so you almost feel guilty enjoying it. Well, the good thing about history is it is past, so we can appreciate what happened, and we can appreciate the tragedy, but at the same time, we can also appreciate the drama and the heroics of these situations, and that's all right to do. So these human interest stories combined with the larger overall picture is something that I strive for. Again, I really follow a sort of a cinematic approach, keeping it real, keeping it honest, you know, well-researched, and try to give a good overview, but also always mindful that a reader, just like an audience, needs to have a certain amount of drama, a certain amount of dramatic tension to keep them involved in the storyline. So that's the approach that I generally take in this work and most of my other works as well.
So, Jay, what turned you on to the history overall and made you kind of push forward in this area?
Well, here's a thought. How about growing up on the edge of the battlefield at Gettysburg, Pennsylvania? I got immersed at a pretty early age.
Wow.
The Civil War, famous Civil War Battle of Gettysburg. I was practically barely a toddler when I started crawling around Devil's Den, and I guess it never stopped. I just had an appreciation for the local history in the area. I was at the park. There's the cavalry battle. Some of the cavalry battlefields were a few hundred yards from the house that I grew up in. The reenactors, the statues, everything going on. It just really captured my attention. And then, of course, growing up when I did, and having parents and relatives were involved in the World War II period, and actually had the fallout from that. And we used to play Army, and it was always World War II style with Tommy guns and so on and so forth, emulating combat and Rat Patrol. So all those childhood influences is something that just stuck with me and became immediate, almost immediate topic in my film early on when I came to Hollywood, and I found myself with, as a very young professional working out here, being involved in the movie version of Cornelius Ryan's A Bridge Too Far. And I guess all those things together just kind of made history my favorite subject to do something on.
Well, I totally understand, you know, and it's interesting for me because, I mean, both Mo and I mean, we're Canadian, so we don't necessarily get the same education as you do in this case, so we don't know that much about the Civil War. But one thing that I found, especially with Pearl Harbor, is, it's interesting for us to read about it, and it does kind of, I know for me, it kind of fires up my juices to start reading and exploring some of this as well.
Yeah, I've read I've had that as well from your book.
I was just gonna interject. When we get to the European side of the war, of course, the Canadians were very involved in that. So that's something you probably have a bit more background in coming from Canada.
Yeah, that's one of the things that I do find interesting because I work as an editor for television, et cetera. But I was lucky enough to edit some pieces on the Normandy invasion and such for our military museum. So I actually, you know, when I did that and when the opportunity to talk to you came up, that I really drew the two things together, and I do find this very fascinating and just, you know, amazing what everybody went through at the period.
Mo, I guess we're waiting for your input on that one.
Okay. Well, I'm just going to mention, you know, I just consider this history to be very important, to never forget the sacrifice the individuals made. So I appreciate what you were doing here with this book from that perspective as well. You talk about moving on to Europe and to the Battle of Midway and things like that, but do you feel that there's many more stories? I'm sure there is. There's many more stories to tell specifically on Pearl Harbor, at Pearl Harbor and the island and around that day and the following days after the attack.
To a certain extent, and there is a bit of history of course, of Pearl Harbor and of what happened on the island in terms of the development of the continuation of the war. Just about everything went through there. Every veteran that I talked to, the Pacific, has a brief story about what happened in Pearl Harbor when they passed through. But of course, after December 7th, it really became a rear guard action in a way. I mean, it was a supply center. It was the heart of the strategic brain trust conducting the battle, the supply, the training, and so on and so forth. But naturally, it didn't get into any action of note after that. So the story, in a way, kind of moves on from Pearl Harbor and Oahu and Hawaii, but they're always in the background. They're always a key part of the larger story. So while I would say that there are little things that happened, probably the most famous was the LST explosion in 44 that was hushed up in the East Lock, but it doesn't quite have the frontline appeal of some of the other areas of the battle. So I would say that this is probably the story, and any time it might be mentioned later, as important as it was, it would be as a command center, as an intelligence center, as a supply and training center. People are going to want to concentrate and focus on the front lines and the battles and the clashes at the many other places that, including, of course, the Aleutian Islands, which is, you know, another part of the United States that became a state later, but at the time was a territory, and that's where the story will move at some point in the future.
Fortunately, I read it and say it's a very exciting, you know, what's happening there. One of the things that really captures for me in that day, though, that I didn't quite realize until I read your book was both how quickly it happened and yet how long it took at the same time, if that makes any sense to you. Kind of that the attack seemed, it was very sudden and devastating immediately, and yet it lasted quite a long time. There was a second wave and then the fallout afterwards. So that's one of the things I think you capture very, very well within the book.
Well, thank you. I mean, it's, you know, like I said, I try to be as complete as possible, make the whole timeline work, hit dramatic events, and as I said, and the human interest things, but keeping in mind the timeline of the events, and of course, a lot of what happened on Oahu and at Pearl Harbor took place before December 7th, and I get into that a bit. There's a wonderful work among many on Pearl Harbor by Gordon Prang, At Dawn We Slept, and he spends more than half the book talking about everything leading up to it, the perspectives of both the Japanese side and the American side, what was happening in Washington, what was happening in Oahu, and how all this led up to a situation that nobody thought could happen, and yet it did. Very much like the 9/11 tragedy of 2001, a lot of things coming together leading up to a situation that nobody thought could ever happen. That's how history is. Often clues are overlooked, connections are overlooked, people are overlooked until something comes together in a crisis, and that's why it's important to still study the human behavior of the past to get some kind of an understanding of what the human behavior of the present and the future is going to be.
All right, so my question was going to be, how long ago did you start working on this comic? I assume that you kind of planned this to coincide with the 75th anniversary, so when did you wind up kind of deciding that this was what you were going to do, and when did you meet Ed Jimenez, is it?
Yeah, Ed.
And so how long have you been working with him?
Well, I got the idea in June of this year, and started discussing with my partner and getting some feedback, and then I started writing the story and doing what I call the storyboards, the rough sketches of what I imagined each panel or cell would look like. And then we went through a period of almost 2 months of trying out different artists, and it just wasn't working out until somebody introduced me to Ed's work, and we said, we think we found the guy, and had him start to work on it. And then that was, I have to applaud him for pretty dedicated, concentrated effort, and me feeding him information the whole time for about a 8-week period to get it going and get it finished. So that was tough, but it was necessary and valuable that he had the dedication and the talent to make it work. Now, I've never actually met him because he lives in Costa Rica. I've talked to him, and I'll probably meet him someday. We've talked on the phone and, of course, communicated electronically. You can do that these days. And, you know, that's not as uncommon as it was at one time in the past, that people can collaborate over long distances, but it worked.
So is Ed going to be doing the rest of all of them, or is he just going to be doing the Pearl Harbor ones?
Well, I believe I'm going to have him work on, with me on the Battling Bastards of Bataan, and beyond that, we're not sure. We're going to kind of look at where things are, and Jim will be involved, of course, and may do continue to do what he's been doing, and may do some more depending on his busy schedule. And I have some other people in mind, but right now I'm keying on Ed to do the same thing on the next one that he did on this one, and after that, we'll have to make those decisions at a later date, because I'm just not sure at this moment. But I do like his work and his attitude and working with him.
Yeah, there has to be a lot of, I think you have to be really diligent with the art in this kind of case, because you don't really want to get those details wrong when you are looking at something so historic.
Well, that's right, and we did have to go through a number of looking at a number of examples and photos and information about uniforms and weapons and planes and everything else, because he's not of a real military background. He's a comic book artist. That's his background. So, but he was willing to learn and willing to accept the feedback that I gave him in terms of authenticity and of the scenes and so on. And that's again, just having a really good collaborative effort with several folks working on the same project, which happens a lot. And certainly, I think we were successful in this regard, getting it done and keeping it accurate.
Okay. Have you read a lot of war comic books? I mean, there have been a lot of really excellent ones over the years. And
now,
so
I'm just going to jump in here, Brett,
okay,
because
please.
You just stole my question.
Like, excellent.
Like, how dare you? How dare you? No, I'm just kidding. But yeah, no, it's true. I mean, the history of military comic books, you know, I mean, not just books like Sergeant, you know, Fury and his Hellion Commandos and GI Combat, but also even, you know, the idea of Captain America punching out Hitler on the cover of a comic book. It's uh-huh. There is a history there that you can draw upon. And I'm just wondering if you, how many of those you read and your influence. And I don't know, Brett, if your question was different.
Nope. Basically going the same place.
Well,
yeah,
to be honest,
I just didn't want you to steal it from me.
Yeah. To be honest, in my case, not a great deal. As I said, I was influenced as a kid by reading some as a kid. I particularly remember a series that put out by the U.S. Navy on the Civil War that I really enjoyed, and I kept a couple with. I've talked to other people like yourselves who are much more familiar with the body of work than I am, so I don't have a lot to compare it to. I talked to some different people and trying to get ideas for how to make it work the best. And again, relying on the comic book artists, both Ed, Jim, and people that we didn't end up using. So my experience in the field is pretty limited. I've been waiting for you two gentlemen to start grilling me on comic book details to make me look really really backward in this area, because I don't have the sophistication in the area that I should, but I'm always willing to learn. I had a colleague today at my job who's quite into comic books, and he was pointing out things about the style and so on, and I'm just kind of nodding my head going, uh-huh. I said, wow, I never, thinking to myself, of course, I never really thought about it in that way, but I'm glad that he likes it.
Well, Jay, you know, based on that, I'd love to know your favorite X-Men story. Go ahead. No, I'm just curious, actually, as you're writing it then, you know, and this is a medium that's brand new to you in many ways then, kind of what are the challenges and the kind of the quirks of the medium and the pacing, and because it's different, I'm sure, than anything else you've written.
Yes and no. I mean, yes, in terms of yes, it's quite, has to be quite, it has to move along. But again, as I said, I think one of my specialties in some of my other published works have been in their broad appeal. And part of this is, I think, just, again, part is because of my filmmaking background, part is because of assignments that I've accepted over the years. And I have one book that's called The Native American Experience, and I call it 35,000 Years of History in 64 Pages, because I was mandated to do in 64 pages entire history of the Indians of North America, that, of course, including the United States and Canada. And it was given a limitation of 64 pages with a lot of pictures and accompanying documents. And I took it all the way from the days of the land bridge right up to Indian casinos. So
wow.
I guess, something of a knack for hitting the high points and enough of the details to keep people involved.
Now, if you had really wanted to impress me, you would have done it in 63.
Yeah, but that wasn't the mandate.
Oh, I'm sorry.
And nobody does anything in 63 pages. Come on.
Come on.
Even numbers.
Even numbers. Well, that's interesting, though, also because the beginning, like I say, is kind of more of a visual novel storytelling style, and then the second story is that more traditional comic book. So was there any differences kind of in how you're crafting those? Is that at all a different experience, or is it just all kind of flowed out of the same place?
Well, no, absolutely. I think there is. First of all, the story of Separated by War is an idea that I've had for a number of years that I've always wanted to do, and then voila, all of a sudden the opportunity to do it in a form that I thought I could really do it well in dropped in my lap. It was meant clearly to be more along the lines of a mainstream comic book, in that there's much less narration, there's a lot more dialogue, caption, a development of specific characters, a leading man, a villain who's kind of unseen so far, but is going to be introduced in the next segment, or a composite villain, really. But we see a personality coming out very shortly on the Japanese side, and again, good versus evil, based on true events. Some dramatic license, definitely, but based on a really composite of true people and events. But definitely, as I guess you can see, in a really stylized look, with again a lot more dialogue and more of a character and true drama. So that, in regard, it was all done intentionally different from the pure history part of the book.
And Brett and I were talking earlier about how intriguing we found that concept, right, Brett?
Oh, absolutely, and I just think it's a really good idea to go with the serialized story along with the like almost textbook version at the front. I think that's, smart, because it helps provide everybody with something.
Well, that's what we try to do. And, also I think people will get something out of, they'll get something out of the story that's there. If not, maybe not so much the subtleties of the history, I don't necessarily expect there'll be a lot of thought beyond people who really know and read the period, but that's okay. But the basic thing is it goes with my sort of tenet of entertainment, and that is that there are so many great stories and characters in times past that in my mind, although I would get, I'm sure, a lot of disagreement in this, in my mind, that can be just as dramatic, just as exciting, just as comedic, or just as anything else, as a lot of purely fictional stories. So I find a lot of drama in human life and in history, and I'm always fascinated by the when I discover a different and new story that I didn't know about, and that really happened, and say, wow, that's a lot of good drama. It would take a dramatist a while to dream up that scenario. But you know what? I think I'll take part of it and use it in a dramatic story of my own. So I guess the whole idea that's human history, that's human behavior, and we can't all experience the same things, but I think we can all appreciate the human condition and human emotion and how it comes out, be it in a purely fictional character or a character that's based on or part of somebody's actual life.
Now, it occurs to me as we're doing this that we've explained kind of what the opening, the first portion is, and how that's the event at Pearl Harbor, the attack, but we keep on referring to the second story, and we haven't actually explained the hook or the story or what's different about that film. Here's your chance to do the elevator pitch, Jay. Go ahead and explain to the listening audience what's in that second story.
The second story is it's about a pilot of a commercial plane of the time. It was, they called the Pan Am Clippers. They were seaplanes. And they were the only long-distance commercial aircraft available for passengers at the time. And they're caught in the middle of the beginning of this surprise attack in the Pacific. And they become marooned and trapped. And eventually, a large part of the passengers and crew become prisoners of the Japanese. But the pilot escapes and dedicates the next 4 years of his life to find and rescue the crew and passengers of that plane. And he goes through all kinds of hell in the Pacific to do it.
I'm already hooked.
Yeah, it's fascinating. And you said based on real events, or what exactly?
Based on this event itself did not happen. This character did not do these things. But all of the conditions and all of the experiences that he'll go through, flying search planes, battling the guns of New Guinea and Rabaul, and volunteering for hazardous duty with the Navy just so he can get a little closer, and all those things are there's a, the surrounding story is all real. But this character is although could be based on experiences of a number of different people, did not exist in real life.
And how many parts do you believe this story will be?
Well, that's a good question. I guess it depends on how many comics I can turn out. But I would say 20, 22, 24 parts, perhaps.
Oh, wow. It's going to be great.
Yeah, I'm fascinated by that. You know, I also really appreciated and was fascinated by the people and the quotes that you did have in there. Is that something that's going to be ongoing? Is in all of them? Is just in introducing the people that were actually in the scenarios?
Now you're talking about Separated by War, or are you talking about
the documentary portion?
Well, absolutely, because I have many more great, and I mean great, quotes from eyewitnesses and veterans of the war than I could possibly ever include in all my written materials. So any chance I have to work in this case, obviously, short bits, short pieces, but try to work in the true words of the true people who were there, I'm happy and delighted to work that in and share some of that in this work as well, of course, as I do in my longer works.
And I'm curious, is there any books then that you would recommend to people who listen to this and read your comic book, your fine comic book, Pearl Harbor and the Day of Infamy, from World War II comics with an X, I should mention.
Yeah.
And Monroe Publishing, and we just want to get that plug out there again. Is there anything that you recommend as far as a book or maybe a documentary or even a fictionalized account that you think that told the story well in some way?
Yeah, sure. Okay, well, I guess I would have to start unashamedly by mentioning my War Stories World War II, The Pacific Volume 1, Pearl Harbor to Guadalcanal, as being a work that I think is, as I say, pretty visual, pretty entertaining, and contains a lot of great veteran stories. I had already mentioned, of course, the Gordon Prang's At Dawn We Slept. There's an entire series of books by Samuel Morrison, who was the official Navy historian on the naval history of the Pacific, and that's a pretty good detailed work. Let's talk about, because I could go on and talk about more detailed nonfiction works and works of history, but trying to cover a little bit of everything. I don't know of a fictional book account of Pearl Harbor, although I'm sure they exist. But naturally, we have the various movies that over the years have covered it. The most recent, of course, being Michael Bay's Pearl Harbor, which had a fictitious story surrounding at the center of the larger surrounding events. Tora, 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 going back a little bit to the classic Pearl Harbor movie. And they're good places to start. There's probably others I'm not thinking of at the moment that focus on Pearl Harbor and the attack, but there certainly is a wealth of good information out there, both in book and multimedia form. Victory at Sea is a television series of the 50s that stood the test of time. Another one using a lot of combat footage. So, yeah, that's it's a well-covered subject, but obviously I attempted to find a new wrinkle, something a little different for this occasion, for this 75th anniversary, and do a comic to add to the many good works that are out there.
And I know History Channel is going to be airing quite a bit on the day of the 75th anniversary approaches. But I do hope people check out your book. I really, really enjoyed it myself. I found it very exciting, very interesting, and very unique. And it's nice to, something, Jay, I want to say actually is that when you do read a lot of more traditional comic books like we do, something like this is a completely different style and a change of pace. It's very refreshing, and so it fills that need too. So for me personally, that's one of the reasons why I think I enjoyed it so much, and I think I hope people do check it out. Brett, what do you have to say?
Yeah, absolutely. It is totally different than what we normally read. So I think that it takes a few pages to kind of get into that mindset. But once you do, I do think the payoff is absolutely there. So I completely wish you the best on it, and hope that you do manage to get through all of the comics that you want to, because I really want to see the ending to the last story, the second story.
Well, thanks. We're going to do our best, and thank you, Mo,
Brett.
Sorry, Brett. I'm getting tongue-tied here for a second.
I also consider him.
You're getting me so excited. I'm getting tongue-tied. Thanks.
Jay, I also consider him unimportant to the podcast. Just in case you're wondering.
I think he's very important. But Mo and Brett, thanks to you two for giving a different perspective to me. Listening to your input is very valuable, and hopefully will help shape what we do in the future to make it even better and more enjoyable for a variety of audiences.
Well, and absolutely.
Wonderful.
Anytime you need assistance, we are more than happy to help out. We have opinions.
We certainly have opinions, and we do hope we get a chance to see more of this work and talk to you again in the future. And of course, this is a podcast, so that means it's hosted on our own website and available through iTunes and Google Music and all these other places. But because it's a podcast, Jay, we're not beholden to the FCC or anything like that. No commercials, nothing to worry about. We have a little tradition here on We Talk Comics that I'm going to introduce you to. And I'm going to give you the opportunity to end the show. I will go OET on the show and give you the chance to do something that we like to call a little segment called Plug Your Shit.
Okay. Can you give me a hint?
No, go ahead. Plug and promote whatever you'd like to do here. It's your chance to promote and just tell people where to get the product.
Okay, well,
this is the shameless self-promotion time.
Okay, well, I thought I'd been doing that. But I'll quickly wrap it up and say that we really welcome the comic book aficionados to take a look at Pearl Harbor and the Day of Infamy by World War II Comics with an X. Any information that they might want to have is on our website, World War II Comics, comx.com, worldwar2comics.com. We have links to Facebook, Twitter, the whole bit. We have digital versions in from the Kindle, from Amazon, iTunes, Nook, Google PlayStation coming soon, and traditional paper comic books. And if you want to get a good idea of how to learn a little bit more and enjoy yourself in World War II history, we'll hope that you give it a try. And there's some advertisements in the comic book to some of the other World War II works that we recommend, that if anybody wants to get out of comics for a little while and look at some other type of publication, there's a number of suggestions there too. So I can promote my, as you said, and I'll promote yours as well. I think you two guys are terrific hosts, and I hope we do have a chance to talk again when the next volume is ready and in your hands.
That would be fantastic.
I'd be here.
All right, Jay Wirtz, that is, well, the second story, Separated by War, and of course we have Pearl Harbor and the Day of Infamy, World War II Comics. Thank you so much, Jay.
All right, thank you, Brett. Thank you, Mo.
Have a good night.